I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Dirt and Spray continues.
So your wife tells you something. I need to know, where are we going with this?
Andy Dirt Johnson.
She said, you know what I think we should contemplate buying? She wants to put our kid on a leash.
Brandon Sprague.
It's like seeing a tiger in a zoo. You just feel awful for it.
More Dirt and Sprague.
Look, she's an unbelievable mom. She carries all the weight in our family. I have to preface all this because she says I only throw her under the bus on the air.
So you just threw it
on the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number two, Dirt and Sprague here. 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. Good morning. Happy Monday, April the 6th. Hope you guys enjoyed your weekend filled with sunshine and rainbows and unicorns and Easter eggs and God and golf, or, you know, whatever you did. Barbecue, good food, laughing. I don't know. I hope you did something great out there. But it's nice to have you guys in with us on this Monday. Dirt will be back tomorrow, and then his dream vacation of being in Hawaii and away from here is officially coming to an end, as we'll be back as a show fully. It's been 2 weeks. We haven't seen each other. It's been a while, man. I think he misses me. That's what word on the street is. A lot to get to in the second hour of the radio program. You can reach the station at 503-864-6326. We call that the Fan text line. Also, 1080 AM, 105.1 FM, the Odyssey app, and YouTube. Good morning, YouTube. Nice to have everybody with us on the YouTube stream. A loaded second hour, a lot of Final Four. We got national championship game chatter to get to today.
We're going to have to dual screen it tonight. Normally, the national title game, you know, and the Blazers the last few years, you're like, okay, they're just whatever. But no, this is actually...
So the title game's at 6, correct?
5:50 p.m.
5:50, so 6 o'clock.
Well, no, I think it's like 5:30 they start in with the stuff, with lineups and the national anthem and all the other things, okay. And then at 5:50, it's tipping off.
Can we talk about this real quick? You've derailed my intro into the second hour, but you've sparked something into my mind that I forgot to put on my show sheet.
I didn't mean to.
I know you didn't.
Okay.
So they did this in the Final Four lead-up into the second game of Michigan-Arizona. They had a concert.
Yeah. What are we doing?
Why did we do that concert?
I don't know.
That artist didn't feel like he really wanted to do that concert either. Did you get that energy? I don't know what his name was. I forget.
That was, like I said, the sound wasn't on. Family birthday party.
So you just saw it.
So I'm like, visuals. What the heck's going on? And somebody's like that. And somebody said, I think it's the Chainsmokers. And
the Chainsmokers. Thank you. I was blanking on who it was.
So
terrible music. But
I'm like, okay.
I don't know. It's very odd. It went way too long. And then their last song, which I think is one of their biggest hits, he like paused for a second and looked like, am I singing this song? Are we doing this? And then it started. And then, I don't know. It was very odd to me. So you say 5:50 because of the buildup. I'll say 6:00.
These events, we need to stop making them
concerts
more than they are.
I just want the game.
Yes.
Give me the game. If you need an in-between for analysis because you're going from one game to another, give me my 15 minutes of that, and then let's get into it.
Yeah, in between games, the players need a certain amount of time to get loose and go through their warm-ups. I believe it's 20 to 25 minutes. If that's not enough time to do anything and everything you need to do, then what are we doing?
I also, because YouTube TV doesn't always give me the default channel, they give you all the alternate broadcasts, and I clicked and didn't realize I'd clicked this, and I'm listening, and I'm like, what is this broadcast? Because I wasn't fully paying attention to the play-by-play because I was doing multiple things. And I realized I was watching the Fab Five broadcast.
Because
they're all back together. They're all friendly now. Chris Webber's made men's with everybody. And so it's a cool idea because of who's playing. But I'm kind of a customary, traditional play-by-play guy when I watch a big sporting event. So that kind of threw me off as well. But we'll get to the Michigan side of the Arizona and Michigan Final Four. We're going to start with Illinois and UConn. I want to remind you guys, Pittsburgh is getting ready to host the NFL draft this year.
It's right around the corner.
A couple weeks away, dude. Dive into a lot of football tomorrow once Dirk gets back. And the city's kickoff celebration will begin with an unforgettable invite-only night of music. The night before takes place Wednesday, April 22nd. at the Rivers Casino Event Center featuring Jason Aldean, John Morgan, and Shane Proffitt. Visit odyssey.com/thenightbefore to enter now for your chance to win the national contest. Prize includes round-trip airfare and two-night hotel and two tickets to the old show there, thenightbefore.com or odyssey.com/thenightbefore. There you go. Let's talk about the Illinois-UConn, or as Magic Johnson likes to call it, Illinois. UConn, yeah, was in the postgame. Illinois and UConn Final Four. Score-wise, close-ish.
UConn controlled that the entire
They way. Really did.
Illinois could not hit threes consistently.
No, they shot 20...
It was horrible.
What did they have here? I just had it up. Give me a second. They had 23%. They were 6 of 26 from 3.
Yeah.
And that kind of is the game.
And that's their game. Their game that's is their game. Shooting threes.
Stojakovic, he had 3 in the first matchup against UConn. He had 9 in the second. Keaton Wagler ended up having way more points.
But when you watched it, he did that at the end because nobody could score, so he started going one-on-one and trying to drive.
He was 2 of 10 from 3. And so you take Wagler out, Stojakovic was out. Their bigs were okay, but not extraordinary.
Yeah, Mirkovic couldn't hit threes.
I don't know,
the
man.
The Ivicic brothers.
71-62. It was only a 34-33 second half, but
yeah.
It just didn't feel as close as the score indicates.
Defensively, I mean, at least Illinois didn't, you know, they stayed in it and they scrapped as hard as they could. But yeah, UConn controlled that.
Yeah, they absolutely did. And so UConn was the team coming in that I think, it's weird to say this because they were a 2 seed, but they were very distant 4th best odds to win the title of the Final Four. And we had talked early last week once we had kind of figured out who was going to be
UConn
in this.
UConn had the most head-scratching losses during the regular season.
But they only lost 5
well,
games.
Well, I know. I know.
Like, it's funny the way we do talk about these teams, and it's like, oh, what's their record? Oh, they're 33-3, but they have head-scratching losses. It's like, but they played 36 games. They lost 3 times. but you're not wrong. 34-5. And they lost by like 20 points in the Big East title game to St. John's.
Yeah.
So I hear what you're saying, but this is the tournament. They're on the verge of maybe winning their 3rd in 4 years. And I thought the way they played Illinois, they beat them up inside with Terrace Reed Jr., and there's a really good backstory. He's taking on his old team and the development of him from when they got him as a transfer to what he is now and how Dan Hurley is like the hardest on him of all the players. But UConn does it again, man. There's just something about Dan Hurley and UConn. And I think it was Bruce Pearl, to give him credit in the postgame. It seems crazy to say this, given he's not going to have the most of the coaches, right, ever. But if he does indeed win tonight, and they're taking on a team that's pretty damn powerful.
Yeah.
If he beats Illinois and Michigan and wins his 3rd in 4 years, I really don't think it's out of line for Bruce Pearl or anybody else to say, this is kind of John Wooden-ish stuff. Isn't just like, oh, really great coach. This is like kind of all-time stuff you just don't see, especially in this modern version of college basketball.
Oh, no question.
And how much more difficult I think it is. For him to go in there and UConn to play the way that they played to shut down that Illinois offense and hold them to 6 of 26 from 3, just here they are again, rearing their ugly heads and – fans were booing Dan Hurley in the postgame interview. I know you did you probably didn't hear
no,
that.
I didn't hear that.
But he's being interviewed and it's being broadcast over the arena and you can hear the audible boos.
Oh,
and
all the Michigan fans and Arizona fans
everybody.
That are in there.
And he even stopped the interview. He goes, What are they booing about? And it's like, you dude, nobody likes you. And he kind of knows that, so he plays into it. But here's UConn again, back in the national championship game.
And this is why I think Michigan's a 6.5-point favorite, deserved to be the favorite.
Yes.
People are probably wondering why they're not a bigger favorite. It's because of Dan Hurley. It's like, nope, they will have a game plan. They will have a concept of what they've want to do. He's got experienced guys. If the freshman keeps knocking down clutch shots, that kid has no conscience.
His only basket in the second half, by the way, was like the most pivotal basket late in the game. It's pretty much what sealed UConn's win. Like, when you have a freshman playing like that, hitting big shots, your big is dominating right now. You got a Caravan out there that's been there forever and understands what the system is. Like, they're just such a complete team. and they're full of dogs with experience. And then you add a freshman to the wrinkle who is not at all starstruck by the bright lights. Like, he's ready to go.
So I think the interesting thing will be, can Terrace Reed, with his strength and physicality, move Mara out of the way and not let him be a presence defensively? Or
that's going to be the entire game to me, is Mara and Reed. Because Mara, I thought, was
if Michigan doesn't have to double team Reed and Mara can defend him in the post and then they can spray out to the shooters, it's going to be real hard for UConn to get consistent offense. But if he starts either getting Mara into foul trouble or just physically overwhelms him and they have to double team him, then it's going to be a ball game.
So I'm looking through and I'm trying to see. I think they cut it to 4 a couple times. Illinois did. And then,
yeah, I thought they cut it. They didn't get any closer than 4.
I think 4 was, yeah,
down the
4
stretch.
Was the closest they got. It was 66-62.
Yeah.
And then some free throws kind of separated. And the, yeah, here it is. It was Mullins hitting a shot. There was 52 seconds left. It was 63-59 with about 50 seconds left. Illinois had this big,
and I thought, Caravan had just missed a wide open three.
He missed a 25-foot three-point shot. Yeah, and it was 59-63. Mullins' only second-half shot was with 50 seconds left, and he hit a three. It was 59-66.
Yeah.
That was all she wrote. They ended up hitting a three, coincidentally, to cut it back to 4, but they started playing the foul game, and ultimately UConn hit the free throws to ice it. So I don't think either of us are really surprised. It's just like Illinois didn't hit threes, and we knew this one was going to be a close game because of stylistically how they played. And Terrace Reed Jr., man, he's becoming kind of the story of the tournament. If they can win this, and you look at the rich history of UConn with obviously our very own Donovan Klingon, Sanoga, remember him a couple years ago? The Bigs. Hashim Tabeet, Emeka Okafor.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you name it, UConn's got kind of a rich history. And then you mix in guard play. You mentioned Castle, who's, God, he was really good in that Nugget Spurs game, paired with everybody else in the perimeter that they have right now. I think the game really boils down, and I'm kind of doing an early peekaboo here because I want to talk about Michigan and Arizona and the way that game went. I think it's really just boils down to Mara and Reed. And if Reed can hold his own, despite how tall Mara is.
Yeah, will Reed be able to move him out and not let him get so low?
Well, he's 7'4", though. It's like, even if you move him, are you going to get over him? I think that's the difficult
thing. I don't think that's the thing. I think they want to keep him from getting all those little lob dunks and tip-ins and that sort of thing. If you got to make him play over the top from at least 10 to 12 feet out.
Yeah, but the way Cadeau was throwing some of those he threw some perfect lead passes in some of those pick actions.
And then how healthy is Yaxel? He's going to play, but he's got a sprained MCL.
I know, and he came back in that game, even looked at the crowd, and they said on the broadcast that he told everybody in the crowd, like, I have to come back, I have to finish this one out.
But how effective will he be?
That's the tough – I thought Merez Johnson Jr. – look, we're already getting to the other game because, you know, UConn-Illinois was just basically who could hit threes, and Terrace Reed Jr. being a nightmare down low for Illinois. A little disappointed. I thought Illinois could have done it. I just really liked the way that they were playing at that point.
They were in, they were fighting, they were scrapping, they just couldn't hit threes. If they hit a couple more threes, now it's a one-possession game and anything can happen.
I just can't believe this guy might win his third in 4 years.
I know.
It's just nuts to say. And we'll get to a preview of the title game. Let's talk a little bit about the Arizona-Michigan game. Not so much to say about...
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
That one, that was an utter beatdown. We had breaking news happen on Friday going into the game, and it just turns out that that didn't matter whatsoever. So we'll talk about that as we roll on with some Final Four conversation. Hour number 2, Dirt and Sprague on 105.1, The Fan. Well, there's not a whole lot of good to talk about from the Arizona-Michigan game, as this was a 30-point rout. I know it didn't finish as a final score of 30 points, and they ended up winning by, 18? But, oh my Lord, they stretched it to 30. Mara had 26-9, and then you had Cadeau had a double-double. He ended up being okay from the nut allergy. He had 10 assists by himself. He had more assists than Arizona's entire team did. Linda Borg ended up leaving this one with an injury. He's got a sprained MCL and a sprained ankle, and he's still going to have to play tonight. That's probably, to your point, like, the Mara Reed stuff is huge. If Linda Borg can't go and be Linda Borg, what's that going to be? Merez Johnson was a nightmare to deal with. And I thought their bench guys were really good. You had Roddy Gale Jr., the explosive athlete for Michigan, coming in, put back dunks, if I could talk correctly, and just Michigan really controlling kind of everything from the get. They were 10-1 to start this game, and they never really looked back. And it's not that I'm, like, stunned. It was more like Arizona just
They didn't answer the bell.
They never answered the bell. They cut into the lead a little bit, but, like, never to the point where you thought Michigan was in serious trouble. And I had said on Friday's show that I'd come in Monday. We talk about how Tommy Lloyd's the UNC coach. I got off the air, and he signed an extension, so I'm an absolute moron. But that being said, man, be ready. Show up. I mean, this was historically just an utter beatdown of Michigan and what they did to a one seed. I had this note in here because I think historically, where is it? According to ESPN research, Michigan's 18-point margin of victory is tied for the largest in a tournament game between one seeds since they began seeding in 1979. The Wolverines are the first team in NCAA tournament history to score 90-plus points in 5 straight games in a single tournament. Wagon. And Arizona, you got to feel good that you got to a Final Four. You hadn't been to one in a long time.
Yeah.
When you lose like that, it doesn't feel as good.
I think everybody thought Michigan was capable of this. And then when they went and they played Duke in that one-off game at the end, and Duke kind of slowed them down and got the win in that game in D.C.
Yeah.
All of a sudden that gave everybody pause, like, oh, well,
they kind of tripped. That tripped, but they didn't play as blowout-ish basketball at the end. They ended up losing in the Big Ten tournament. And so I think people were a little hesitant of, like, oh, is this going to keep going? Tournament games start, and see you later. And maybe Michigan's just destined to be the wagon and win their first title since what year, Swag?
1989.
That would be correct.
Yeah.
Everybody remembers the 1989 title. But in the back of your mind, here's Dan Hurley. Good luck betting against Dan Hurley. You're probably not going to feel great. I, for one, I'm going to double down. I think Michigan, even with the Linda Borg question marks, the way Mara's playing right now, and I know Reed's playing really well, Cadeau operating and leading the offense the way he is. I mean, it led us to get one of the best play-by-play cuts from a Final Four that we've ever had. Kevin Kugler of Westwood One had this line.
Around the Mara screen, gets free for a three, and he splashes it down. Back-to-back triples for Elliot Cadeau. Timeout, Arizona. Michigan with absolutely no pity for the kitty.
Yeah, that one holstered.
He was waiting to drop it. Now, do you think he probably had one for Michigan too, right? Like some kind of rhymey thing with the Wolverines. I don't know what
it would be.
With Wolverines, but you know Kevin Kugler was thinking about something. That's a great call. But Michigan playing the way that they are, they've been playing like this all season long. You and I, for as little of all the college basketball that we followed, it feels like you and I had the same takeaways when we watched the games of, what month was it? You and I both were like, we're in on Michigan. Was it January?
I was in on them after I watched them completely dismantle Gonzaga by 40 in that Thanksgiving tournament.
Yeah,
Vegas.
That's what it was. It was November, and
they
that was like Michigan.
They killed everybody in that tournament, and that was loaded with quality teams, and they were housing them.
The Dusty May backstory is pretty good. Do you know about his backstory, like how he became a coach?
Not all of it.
So I was reading about Dusty May last night, and you know, he goes from FAU, Michigan's in a little bit of trouble with Juwan Howard. It's not going well. We got to fire our Fab Five guy. And they turned to Dusty May because FAU got to a Final Four. I mean, it's like, holy crap, what? FAU? And Dusty May goes in there. Like, people have problems because it's a big transfer portal team. I just think it's utterly dumb that anybody cares anymore that these teams are either portal or recruits. Dusty May's backstory, he started with Bobby Knight. He's a Bob Knight student manager. And so the story goes, he played at a NAIA, and he wanted to get into coaching because he realized, oh, I'm a 5'10 white point guard. I'm not going to the league. This is not a dream for long. So he wanted to get into coaching. So he pivoted in his early life, and he transferred to Indiana. The funny story is, student managers in Indiana were a very hard gig to get. So Bob Knight had four freshmen, four sophomore, four junior, four seniors. He had 16 total managers, four in each class. Every single class had at least 100 kids apply for those four spots. So how did Dusty May stand out amongst the 100 applicants of his grade? Well, you need to know, you have to have relationships. You got to know people. Dusty May famously cut the grass of a team doctor at Indiana. And when he transferred, he told the team doctor, and then that guy went to Bob Knight and said, "You got to hire this guy. No one cuts grass like my guy, Dusty May." And Bob Knight was like, "All right, get his ass in here." And then when you become a student manager for Indiana, you know, and there's obviously tiers to it. Freshmen do all of the gruntiest grunt work you can imagine up to the scene. Like, you're literally breaking the tape. You're tracking all the analytics. It's funny to read, like, what the student managers had to do for every grade. Because, Swag, I'm not kidding. It was track shot selection, track the plays, track the out-of-bounds plays, track tempo, track points per whatever minutes at whatever point of a half. And then it says, and then they'd get all the information to the assistants who would then formulate their scouting report. I'm like, that is the scouting report. That's literally the scouting report. So the coaches just didn't do scouting reports. And Dusty May does not operate at all like Bobby Knight, temper-wise. But what he did take away is the outworking of other coaches. And so if you didn't notice in the UConn-Illinois game, which was before Michigan-Arizona,
he was their scouting.
Dusty
live.
May was the yeah. one scouting the game, and people thought that was very unusual, and people had noted they hadn't really seen something like that since Bob Knight, because Bob Knight would do whatever it took, and he'd sit in the stands. And so he's not a red ass in the way Bob Knight is. He doesn't throw chairs at kids like Bob Knight did, but he did take away the work ethic of one Bob Knight, and his way into the coaching profession was great. Him and four other student managers that had good relationships, they went to the Final Four years and years ago. And they just went to the hotel of these coaches and they basically introduced themselves to every college coach, told them their back history, and did anything they could to secure a job at a Final Four. And one of the guys who I think is now coaching at Santa Barbara, Pasternak, he got his gig in the restroom because he refused to leave Mike Montgomery alone while he was peeing. And so Mike Montgomery was coaching out at Stanford, and this guy went into the restroom and was like standing right next to him at the John, and Montgomery zips his pants and goes, "Dude, I'll give you a job. Now leave me alone." And he gave him an assistant coaching job, and Dusty May ended up getting like a director of I don't know, scouting or whatever.
Yeah, director
player
of ops.
Yeah, player ops. Yeah. And that was his first gig. And it was just him and his buddies driving out to Indy begging coaches for gigs. And so it's a really good backstory. Michigan's a wagon. There's not much to add. They just demolished Arizona. Yeah. I don't know what to make of Arizona losing in that fashion other than to say we saw Michigan do that to a lot of teams this year.
Yeah.
I think it was just jarring to watch that happen to a one seed in Arizona.
Oh, no question. On that stage. And so I think this is all about, I think the first part of the game is, okay, can UConn come in and not let Michigan go on a run early and establish a lead and have to play catch up?
Yep.
And how do they go about doing it? How, you know, what does Dan Hurley have concocted with his guys? Because he's got veteran guys. Mm-hmm. So they can come up with a game plan over, you know, 36 hours and get it ready to go. And then can they sustain offense for 40 minutes to keep up with Michigan?
Or do they bog them down
yeah.
and not allow that offense to get going the way that it happened
against
Arizona? But I
think initially the onus is on UConn. What do you have? Yep. What's your game plan to neutralize Michigan? Can they do it? Does
yep.
Michigan start getting whatever they want offensively, and if they're knocking down threes and running out, okay, it might be a quick night.
Well, let's hear from the coaches of this national championship game. We got Danny Hurley against Dusty May. We got Michigan, UConn. Are you in on Michigan's just going to finish this tournament off and score another 90 points and end up being the wagon from start to finish, or You think Michigan should be terrified of UConn and Dan Hurley as he's here again on the verge of winning his third national championship in four seasons. Just a crazy run. We'll hear from Dusty May and Dan Hurley as we talk a little bit about the national championship game next. Getting to a local wake and bake coming up at 8 a.m. We'll dive into the NBA stuff from over the weekend, including your beloved Trailblazers, who are back in action. Took a couple games off, or a couple days off, I should say, as they can finish no worse than ninth place since the Warriors lost last night on Peacock to Kevin Durant. We will get to a very disgusting but interesting story, sports adjacent. I think it's time we define this man an athlete. I know. Where do you draw the line of athlete, not athlete? We'll have to settle that coming up at 7:45. But we got a national championship game tonight. Are you excited? Is this an exciting game? Because you don't know who's going to win, or you're just hoping, or...
I don't know. It's not a foregone conclusion. Michigan is the favorite. But UConn is...
Are you hesitant to pick Michigan with me?
I just have a moment of pause.
Yeah.
I don't want to discount what it means to have that experience and being on that stage.
I think
with
we just
Hurley
saw it.
And, yeah.
I mean, that team was, look, they're a two seed, right? Sounds dumb to say this out loud.
Yeah.
Distant fourth to win the title. All the other teams were ahead of them, and they handled Illinois the way you should handle a team that you have the experience and you're just a little more cohesive, I think, in some ways. And so I think because of that, a lot of people are going to say, look, good luck picking Michigan. If I can not curse on the air, that'd be great. Good luck picking Michigan confidently. I'm going to, and I'll be wrong when we come in tomorrow. We'll talk about Dan Hurley winning his third title in 4 years. But I've liked that team all year. And I understand, I have a lot of respect for Dan Hurley. If he wins his title, my God, we have a lot of conversation to have about winning 3 and 4. But it just feels like a team that is ultimately going to fall a little short because of the Michigan talent and offensive juggernauts we've seen.
I don't
all
think
year.
Michigan's going to overwhelm them the way that they have other teams.
I think there's a chance they does. It's not a disrespect to Dan Hurley.
No.
I have all the respect in the world for that dude, and I love him. I think he's good for the sport. I don't like him, but I like him. You know what I mean? I just think Michigan's different this year. And I think what they did to Arizona, like being up 30 points was that was jaw-dropping to me. I was like, I can't believe this is happening. One thing to win, maybe win going away, but to be up by 30 and 20 most of the way, that was really impressive by Michigan. Here is Dusty May on how he built his program.
Look, I know this is going to set off a Twitter firestorm, but I think we all are better in certain situations than others. There's an environment that's right for me. There's an environment that's right for you. And sometimes you don't choose that the right environment from the beginning. Or sometimes as people, we change and we need something different for a number of reasons. So the way we choose to look at it, we're going to bring in really, really good guys that are high achievers that want to do it the way we want to do it.
I don't think it's a real thing. I think people write articles sometimes because 8 people on a social media platform complain. There's been people who've just pointed out, like, oh, Michigan's not a real... their entire team's portaled. And during the title game.
Do you want to go around and see how many college basketball teams are...
UConn's best player is a transfer from Michigan.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we doing here?
That narrative needs to stop.
I just think it's dumb, and I don't think it's real. Here is Dan Hurley on how last year's team set up for this year's team.
Well, I mean, this bozo here decided to have, like this guy right here, this bozo decided to hand out wristbands that said Dynasty on them and shirts that said Dynasty on them to a completely different team. Most of the members of the 25 team had nothing to do with 23 or 24. So I just think I set the group up to fail last year by focusing so much on becoming a sports dynasty rather than the process, the preparation, the daily habits, the mindsets that you need to be successful and win enough games to put yourself in position to be a dynasty. I just wanted to jump right to the dynasty, and when we weren't playing at the level of dynasty basketball, I melted.
That's the fair thing about him. He calls himself a bozo. Calling yourself a bozo is you're 10 out of 10 in my book. Here was Dusty May on how they've developed this year's team.
Our staff's been very intentional learning how to become better teachers, bringing in some of the best in different fields to help us. We go watch our lacrosse coaches coach. We visit with our hockey coaches, our football coaches on campus. And I think our desire to learn and share what we've learned with our players, and then also just doing different types of training to help them become smarter basketball players is part of our responsibility.
And one of those coaches on the staff in which he speaks is now the coach at Oregon State basketball, and he is already, dude, talk about diving all the way in. Justin Joyner is, as soon as this game wraps up, he's probably getting on a bird and flying back. He's ready to go. He'll be in the Wake and Bake local edition coming up here at 8 a.m., but the staff is impressive, and I do love hearing that, because even if you can't learn certain schematic things from another coach in another sport, you can learn about leadership, growing their talent in whatever methods that they choose, different team-oriented games that you could take from one
sport
and apply to another.
How they structure practices, film sessions, all of that. Yeah, the skill set and the game is different, but how you develop from individual fundamentals to meshing it into the team concept to – okay, how much are we focusing on ourselves? How much do you focus on your opponent, you know, coming up with that sort of thing? And if you have quality programs to learn from it at the university, let's go tap into how they do it.
It's going to be a tough task for UConn. Not that they can't do it. It's just that Michigan has been really good this year, and UConn's coming in hoping to slow down the Michigan offense and prevent them, I think. I don't think UConn can keep up in the 90s, and so – like, what's the number for you? If UConn wins, what's Michigan score? 70? 65?
Yeah, below 75.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good number to put. Here's Dan Hurley on how they can prepare to take on this Michigan team.
You know, for us, we need to play the game a certain type of way. You know, we obviously can't get into a certain type of game with Michigan. They're, you know, incredibly dominant team, you know, incredibly well coached. Talent up and down the roster, physically imposing, you know, all those things. So, you know, the good thing for us, it's not a seven-game series. Just got to play one game on Monday night.
And that is the fun thing, is it's a one-and-done situation. So if Hurley and UConn can devise the great plan to slow down that offense, which, God, I'm going to look like an idiot tomorrow morning, but I don't care. I always look like an idiot. I don't think they can. This is, if Michigan shoots like Illinois, then yeah, this game is going to be
right if they're not
right
knocking
there.
Them down. The other thing is that I think because Hurley's got a veteran team, he's got a lot of, you know, knowledge and experience there, he might be able to have a couple of wrinkles that they haven't shown on film during the season.
That's a fair point.
Defensively,
yeah.
To throw at them, it's just something they haven't seen. They won't do it for the entire game because Michigan's smart. They'll figure it out at some point. But do they have some sort of half-court, three-quarter trap that is a little different that they'll throw at them and try and just not let them get comfortable?
I was reading about that last night, of how in Europe right now, a lot of European teams percentage-wise have upped and increased the full court pressure. Mm-hmm. And like one team runs at 30% of their games. And that's starting to slowly make its way over to the college and the pro ranks here. The tough part here is, and I'll be curious to watch this tonight, when they're running like high pick Spain action with Cadeau and Mara, just like, it's tough to stop that when you have a 7'4 guy setting the screen and he can roll the way he can. Like, dude, he moves like a slightly lesser athletic version of Wemby. This isn't like some 7'4 guy.
No, he's not clumsy. He's not Sean Bradley out there.
He's very put together. And so the way he dominated against Arizona, he's going to have a little tougher task here against this UConn team, but I'm going to be very curious to see how they can kind of take away some of that action that Michigan was running. And then is Michigan going to shoot the ball the way that they did against Arizona? If they don't, and Hurley can, I think we both agree, keep them below that 75 number by like the last minute or so.
Yeah. And that's the other thing
you
can do, you know, so sometimes you throw a three-quarter court trap, whatever, not necessarily to crank it up and get turnovers.
To get it out of Cadeau's hands.
It's to slow it down, make them burn
deep in
10
the shot clock.
Seconds.
Yes.
And now it's 18, 17 seconds when they're actually into that and slow the game down.
Cadeau cannot just dribble the ball up casually to get into their
stuff. Get into their flow.
You got to get the ball out of his hands, get into a guard who's not as confident,
right?
And then eventually they'll try to pick their way back to get Cadeau the ball. And to your point, get the ball when there's like 16 seconds, 12 seconds, and now we're running some late shot clock stuff. Oh, look at the game clock.
Yeah.
You've run down all your shot
clock. Guys have to go one-on-one and do something.
Yeah. We're going to get a real early read, I think, of what's going to happen based on what UConn can do defensively. But it's Dan Hurley. It's UConn. They're going for their third in 4 years. If he does it, what is the takeaway tomorrow? He's in rarefied air.
He's in rarefied air.
Three in 4 years.
Coach K air.
Yes. Because K finished with five. He'd be at 3 in 4 years.
Yeah.
Man.
And he will. And I think at that point, I think he stays put. He'll get an extension. They'll give him a bonus. I mean, he's like, I'm going to ride this out. Calhoun was, what, 70 when he finally gave up the ghost at UConn?
I heard an interview this weekend. I was with my in-laws yesterday, and it was just me, my daughter, and my in-laws. And we went to a park in Salem to go walk. And Calhoun, coincidentally, was on, and my father-in-law was like, hey, it's your radio station. I was like, yeah, dude, thanks for listening. And the morning show, whatever it was on Sunday nationally, was interviewing Jim Calhoun. And the guy goes, Jim, what's the biggest difference between you and Dan Hurley? And Jim Calhoun pauses for a second, and he goes, I got hair, because he just started, complimenting how good Dan Hurley's been and the impact he's made. And the other thing I like about Dan Hurley is red ass as he can get. One, I love that he leans into the villain role, but he also pays a ton of respect to Jim Calhoun, to Gina Auriemma, to even Kevin Ollie, who was there very briefly but won a national championship. And so the dude has a lot of respect, I think, for the program that UConn was when he got there and what it is that he has created.
It's a basketball-first school.
Yes.
He doesn't have to battle with football for money and headlines.
No, nor should he. The resources should be in men's and women's basketball and dominate in that regard.
So he does this. I think he has his sights set on being the most titles other than Wooden.
The only thing I see getting in the way of all that, if indeed he wins tonight, do the Knicks flame out earlier than they should, and does Dolan panic fire Mike Brown after a year and offer it?
And back up the truck.
Remember our Dama More, he's like the only job
he
thought of that he'd leave for is the Knicks.
Yeah.
It's an East Coast, New York-based family, man.
Hard
to say no to the Garden. And if he ever got fired in the NBA and it didn't work, which I don't know if it would with that personality.
He'd go back.
What college wouldn't give him the Brinks truck? Oh, you won 3 and 4? Please come back and do that for us. So we'll see. I'm semi-excited for the title game. It's the national championship, so there's
that. I think
that
You'll know by the second time out if you're in for a dogfight or
is Michigan just destined to blow
Michigan's
their way through the tournament.
Michigan's just too much.
Agree with you. Is this guy an athlete? Because what he did needs to be discussed. I'll tell you what I'm talking about next on 105.1 The Fan.
Some crimes are so shocking, they don't just make headlines, they forever change our society. I'm Katie Ring, host of America's Most Infamous Crimes. Each week, I take on one of the most notorious criminal cases. Each case unfolds across multiple episodes, released every Tuesday through Thursday, from the first sign that something was wrong to the moment the truth came out or didn't. Listen to and follow America's Most Infamous Crimes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
All right, welcome back in. We got a local wake and bake that we'll get to. Some headlines locally that we'll run through at the 8 a.m. hour. We'll dive into the NBA, talk a little bit about the association. We had a matchup of juggernauts between Wemby and Joker on Saturday afternoon at noon. If you missed it, we'll talk a little bit about that. And then the Blazers can finish no worse than ninth due to the Warriors losing last night on the Peacock Network. I want to ask you, though, before we get to the third hour of the radio program here, Swigard, would you consider Joey Chestnut an athlete? I know that's a random thing to throw at you. No.
No,
why is
I
that?
Would not.
Why is that?
No. Not an athlete.
Okay. Well, I challenge that, and I just ask you if you'd reconsider. I saw this from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Okay.
They did a food contest with themselves and Joey Chestnut. So it was the team against Joey Chestnut.
Right.
In 5 minutes, they saw how much, who can eat the most cake, chocolate cake.
Okay.
Joey Chestnut consumed 20 pounds of cake in 5 minutes, and he beat the Bucks by himself.
It's a skill. It's a circus trick.
Is golf a sport?
Golf is.
Are those athletes?
Is right on the border.
Why is that one?
There is still. I don't know what.
Because you walk?
No, it's more all of the hand-eye coordination that goes on to execute golf shots at the level that they do.
Wasn't that part of the skill part, though? Isn't there hand-eye coordination and swallowing 20 pounds of cake?
Not really.
Hand, see mouth, hand, see mouth.
No.
It's as disgusting as it sounds, by the way.
Yes.
20 pounds of cake. How does anybody do this?
I don't know how you process all of that in that short period of time.
I don't know. I don't think I want to know how it processes. Yeah. I just assume it ends in the worst possible way.
I would think,
20 pounds of cake in 5 minutes going against four National Football League players. First of all, kudos to the Bucks because this is fantastic content. But second of all, when does Joey Chestnut either die doing this or retire from doing this? This obviously doesn't pay life, like, you know, altering $1 billion, but like, at what point does Joey Chestnut hang it up? Is this about ego, or is this still about Do-Re-Mi?
I think it's still about Do-Re-Mi.
Okay. Because I feel like what was the Japanese cat that reigned supreme before him?
Oh, I know who you're talking about. I can't remember what.
He was the number one foodie, you know, eater of all the competitions. Yeah. And then Joey Chestnut came out of
showed
nowhere.
Up and just goes, yeah.
And he's dominated it. He has not given up the title at all. I think he gave it up briefly to be vegan dog guy, and he went back to the regular hot dogs.
He went back to the, he got into trouble because then he went and did a contest, and it violated his endorsement deal or something. I have no idea. And then he went and did his own contest.
Kobayashi. Thank you, Kobayashi.
Yeah.
I'll never forget watching a video of Kobayashi training, because that's what they call it. And he basically went to a Chinese restaurant. He sat down and he just eats massive family style bowls of food. And he goes, I eat till I can't eat anymore.
There you go.
And it's like a whole bowl of chow mein, a whole bowl of chicken, a whole bowl of rice. He's just like, dude, what? That's training? Get me the hell out of here.
Yeah.
Like, 20 pounds of cake, though.
Poker players, chess players, darts, you're not athletes.
Oh.
There's a skill. But yeah.
But you just cited hand-eye coordination in golf. You don't think that's involved in darts?
I think there's a lot more physically going on in golf with the golf swing and strength and all of those
things.
Look,
I agree overall. I'm just playing devil's advocate
here. Because especially now, I mean, how much those guys train, not just hitting golf balls on the practice range, but the physical.
Well, they do it after their rounds, too.
Yeah.
They hit weight rooms after their rounds.
Exactly.
It's not just, I'm going to play 4 hours and be done.
You're not seeing the dart players do that.
They're not putting in the extra work?
No, if you...
you don't think dart players practice?
They practice.
Okay.
But they're not hitting the gym.
You don't think that they're getting their ab routine done so they have the core to throw their darts?
No.
There's got to be a certain level of, like, in-shapeness that Joey Chestnut has to maintain to eat like this, right?
I would think there's, yes.
I know he doesn't look like the most built athlete,
but... You have to keep the machine processing at a certain level.
God, 20 pounds of cake. That's a nightmare right out of the movie Matilda when he has to eat the principal's cake. Just no thank you.
No,
I will be passing
you
on that. All right, loaded third hour. We're going to start with one of our first editions of a local wake and bake. We'll run down what that is and kick off hour number three with that on 105.1 The Fan.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.